Okay, so if you don't have notes on the sacrifices and the feasts, I have some up here.
I wasn't last time here, so I don't have any. Thank you.
Sacrifices and feasts. Nice one.
I got one left over. Let's get a copy of this one here.
Need them both? Well, a lot of feasts, sorry. Okay, we're going to look at the tables in both of them today. So the sacrifices, the tables begin on page 1. The feasts, the tables begin on page 6. So turn to those right away, because we're just going to go from sacrifices right into feasts. Page 1 of the sacrifices, page 6 of the feasts. And all we're going to do tonight is look at what the Old Testament says. We're not going to go into any pictures of what they signify tonight. That's next week. So we're all there? All right. Your sacrifices are primarily in the first 6 chapters of Leviticus. So Leviticus chapter 1 is the burnt offering, chapter 2 is the grain offering, chapter 3 is the peace offering, chapter 4 is the sin offering, and a chunk of chapter 5, and then chunk of chapter 5 and chapter 6 is the guilt offering, also known as the trespass offering. And the tables that I've given you on the sacrifices, I've broken them down into the type of offering. So your first table deals with the burnt offering. And there were different animals that could be presented. And usually it had to do with what you could afford. So if you could afford something from the herd, you were required to give it. If you could afford something from the herd and you brought a bird, that would not be acceptable. So in each case, it would be, for example, the herd and the flock. The flock would include the sheep and the goats. Male without defect, and then the birds, the turtle doves or the young pigeons. And the turtle doves and the young pigeons, those are things you could catch. So if you couldn't afford something from the herd or from the flock, go out and catch something. Catch a bird. I mean, there really is no excuse for you not to bring these offerings. All right? And where they're slain also depends on the type of offering. And I really can't tell you why they were slain in these locations. It simply doesn't tell us. So, for example, anything brought from the herd was slain at the doorway of the tabernacle. And I should have brought my picture. So if you remember from last time, if we go into the courtyard, what's the first thing we're going to run into? Okay, the altar of burnt offering or the bronze altar. If we walk around that and keep on going, what are we going to run into? The laver. Okay, if we go around that and keep on going, what are we going to run into? We're going to run into the tabernacle. Okay, so an animal brought from the herd was slain at the doorway of the tabernacle. If it was brought from the flock, it was slain on the north side of the altar of burnt offering. I don't know why it was the north side. I mean, I can't tell you. Birds, it simply says they were slain at the altar burnt offering, and how they were slain, their heads were yanked off. It was kind of gruesome. I mean, and you're done. The blood for the herd and for the flock, they were sprinkled around on the altar of burnt offering. So the blood would be captured in a basin, and the priest would dip his finger and sprinkle the blood around on the altar. For the bird, it was actually just drained out at the side. How they were butchered. The herd, so anything brought from the herd, the cattle and whatnot, they would be skinned and then cut in pieces, and the entire animal, apart from the skin, would be put on the altar. And the head, the suet, the entrails, after washing, all the remainder of the animal. So if it's from the herd, the only thing not consumed was the hide, and the hide belonged to the priest. For the flock, it was cut in pieces, everything's put on the altar. For the birds, their wings were torn, not severed, and the head and most of the bird was put on the altar. The birds were the only animal where something was actually discarded. So the crop, the feathers, were discarded. They were not burned on the altar. The hide of the herd belonged to the priest. Okay? That's the burnt offering. And when we get into it next week, if you just flip over to page 7, just keep your finger there. I gave you two notes at the top. No blood was offered on the altar of burnt offering. It was sprinkled around, and what was not sprinkled was poured out at the base. And we'll look at the next note the next time. But one of the important things I think to remember about the altar, the burnt offering, and we'll get into this, like I said, next time, it was the basis of all the other offerings. In other words, if you pay attention to the details of the way these offerings were presented, when I say basis, I mean it was the base, and the other offerings were offered on top of it. So you had to bring your burnt offering in order to be accepted, and then your other offerings would go on top of it. And we'll look at some of those references next time. The grain offering, page 2. This gets kind of more involved. There were 6 types of grain offerings. You could bring flour. You could bring something baked in an oven. You could bring something made on a griddle or made in a pan. I'm not exactly sure what the difference between those two would be. I mean, they both seem like they were fried. You could bring heads of grain. And then there was the first fruits that he just makes, almost Moses, when he writes this in chapter 2, makes sort of a casual reference to the first fruits, almost in passing. The additions, oil, frankincense, and salt. For if you brought flour, you would have fine flour, you'd mix it with oil and salt, and then you'd put frankincense on top of it. And what the priest would do is when you brought that, he would take the handful, including all the incense, that would be the Lord's portion, and then the remainder of the grain offering would belong to the priest. If it was baked in an oven, you'd have little cakes, I don't know, maybe little muffins. wafers spread with oil, salt. Nothing was to have honey or leaven. So that was prohibited. And again, in each case, the priest would take a handful, and that would belong to the Lord, and the rest would go to him. The only one that is not offered on the altar was the first fruits. That would just go to the priest. So you can take a look at those. Peace offering. Here you've got three types of peace offering. Birds are not included. Something from the herd, the sheep, and the goats. Again, this time it's male or female without defect. The blood, this is page 3. Page 3, peace offerings. Okay. The blood would be sprinkled around on the altar. Here's what belongs to the Lord. All the fat that covers is on the entrails, the two kidneys with the fat that is on them, which is on the loins and the lobe of the liver. Same thing with the goat. With the sheep, they include the tail. Normally when you think of, have you ever seen sheep right after they're born? They have tails. Usually their tails are cut off, so when you see the little lamb at the petting zoo, there's no tail. They have tails, and they're fat. And the fat tail belonged to the Lord. And so think of it this way. All the fat of the peace offering went to the Lord. The priest got the breast and the right thigh. The rest belonged to the offerer, and the offerer would eat it with the priest. Okay? So when you think of these offerings, the burnt offering, everything is consumed. The only thing that the priest got was the hide of any of the cattle that were offered. Otherwise, everything was consumed on the fire. The grain offering, the priest gets what's left over after he takes out a handful and gives it to the Lord. The peace offering, all of the fat is consumed. The priest gets the breast and the right thigh, and the offerer and the priest get the rest. So the offerer would eat it with the priest. And when Solomon dedicated his temple, what kind of offering did he offer? It was a peace offering. What did he offer? Oh, yeah, there was a large amount. How many?
Was it 1,000?
Oh, it was way more than that. There were 120,000 sheep. How many bulls were there? 20,000? Some huge, huge number. I don't remember off the top of my head. But the reason he offered so many was because it was a peace offering, and a peace offering was shared with the people. So essentially, when Solomon dedicated the temple, he was offering these animals to the Lord, and the people were sharing in it as a buffet. I mean, he was providing a buffet for the nation of Israel. So there were 120,000 sheep being offered, and I think it was 20,000 oxen. I'm not sure. I'll have to look that up. But it was a peace offering, okay? Now, at the bottom of page 3, there were two types of peace offerings. There was a thanksgiving peace offering and a votive or free will peace offering. And basically, they're identical except for when they could be eaten. So it included unleavened cakes mixed with oil, unleavened wafers spread with oil, cakes of well-stirred fine flour with oil. That was most likely the priest's portion. And then this had also cakes of leavened bread, which would be the offerer's portion. And these offerings, the Thanksgiving offering, had to be eaten the same day. The free will could be eaten the same day and the next day. So it all depended on what you called your offering when you brought it. If you called it a Thanksgiving offering, you had to eat it then. If you called it a free will offering, you could eat it the next day as well. It just depended on what you called it.
How long did it have to eat the peace offering?
The peace offering would have to be eaten the same day.
Did they have to eat all of it?
What they didn't eat, they would have to burn. Yes. So if you're bringing a bull for a peace offering, you better be hungry.
Yeah. What I don't understand is, did they have to do all these offerings at one time, or were they separate? One after the other, or no?
Well, you would bring for you could bring a peace offering any time. Well, the way I read it, because the burnt offering was the basis of everything, and it always talks about the offerings being on top of the burnt offering, you would always have to bring a burnt offering. And then you could bring a peace offering if you wanted to. If you sinned, you'd have to bring a sin offering. If you committed some trespass, you'd bring your guilt offering. A lot of these offerings involved grain offerings and drink offerings as well. And we'll look at some of those when we get to the feasts. So if I'm going to bring, for example, a sin offering, I would have to bring a burnt offering. On top of the burnt offering would be my sin offering, which would be offered with my grain offering and my drink offering.
There is a few more.
So it's involved. And when you're talking a nation of several million, a lot of blood is flowing. Yeah. Sin offerings. This is where we start getting even more technical. Sin offerings were for unintentional sin. So when David committed his transgressions with Bathsheba and the subsequent murder of Uriah, those were not unintentional. Those weren't oops situations, which is why David says that God does not desire burnt offering. And it's not so much that God didn't desire burnt offering. There was no burnt offering. There was no offering that David could bring to atone for those sins. He had to fall completely on the mercy and grace of God. All of the animals are without defect. Bulls, and here the sin offering depends on who you are. If you're a priest, you bring a bull. When the whole congregation sins, then the leaders of the congregation have to bring an offering. If a leader sins, he brings a male goat. And then we'll get to page 5 in a minute. There were different offerings for us common folk. So, again, it all depends on who you are, determines where it gets slain. What is important is what happens to the blood for the priest and the congregation. when the priest brought his bull and the congregation brought their bull, the blood was sprinkled seven times before the Lord in the tabernacle in front of the veil. So these two sin offerings, the blood was actually brought inside the tabernacle. Standing in front of the priest is the altar of incense and then the veil, and he sprinkles the blood seven times in front of the veil, and then he puts some on the horns of the altar of incense. Okay?
Jeff?
Yes?
Just not exactly on point, but so is this like part of the annual activity here, or
is no? This is individual.
Just at any time, if you had a bad week. Every day.
If you were
pretty much. Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah, the annual thing we'll look at in a minute when we get to the feast. That would be the Day of Atonement. This is for us as individuals when we screw up. This is what we would have to do. If we want to maintain and keep in mind, these offerings did not save you. These offerings were for the sole purpose of maintaining fellowship with God. When you sinned, fellowship was broken. To restore that fellowship, you brought a sacrifice. And here's where you need to make a distinction between one's relationship with God and one's fellowship with God. Our relationship with God then and now is by faith. No works. In order to maintain fellowship in the Old Testament, they had to offer sacrifices. Our fellowship is based on confessing our sin and relying on the once-for-all sacrifice of Christ. So don't get the idea that a sin offering saved you. It did not. Your faith saved you. The sin offering restored fellowship. So there's a difference between one's relationship and one's fellowship with God. So those two sacrifices, the blood is brought into the tabernacle. And what's important about that is the blood that was brought into the tabernacle, the rest of that animal was not offered on the altar of burnt offering. It was taken outside the camp and burned. So any sacrifice whose blood is brought into the tabernacle is not burned on the altar. It's taken outside the camp and burned. All right? So for the leader, the blood is put on the horns of the altar of burnt offering. The rest of the blood in all three cases is poured out at the base of the altar. All the fat is removed, and the fat that covers the entrails, the kidneys, and so on, just like the peace offering, that's burned on the altar. The rest of the animal's taken outside the camp. For the leader, there's a difference. All the fat's burned on the altar, but then the priest gets the rest of the offering. So the difference between the peace offering and the sin offering, the priest shares the offering with the offerer. The sin offering, if it's for a leader, the priest gets the rest of the offering. It's his. And he can eat it. The next page, page 5.
Hey, Jeff. The scapegoat, that's only once a year.
That's the Day of Atonement. Yep.
Did I miss something? You said the priest gets it in the sin offering?
Only if it's from a leader. Yeah. The last row, priest portion, the priest doesn't get anything if he offered it. He doesn't get anything from the congregation because that animal's burned outside the camp. If it's from a leader, all the fat, just like the priest offering, that gets offered on the altar, the priest gets the meat. Now, common people, we get options of goat, sheep, turtle doves, And then there's even a bloodless sin offering. And again, unintentional sin. Females without defect. If it's a turtle dove, there has to be two. One is a sin offering, one is a burnt offering. Okay? And again, depends on, you know, where they're slain. We'll get to the last column in a minute. Look at the second to the last row. On the altar, burnt offering, the Lord's portion, all the fat is consumed just like the peace offering, and then the sheep and the goat, the priests get the rest of the offering. So the meat that the priests get to eat for themselves and not having to share it with the offerer, that's the sin offering. So, and again, you're talking an enormous amount of meat here. Because it's not just one or two people bringing their sin offering every day. If you've got a congregation of 3 or 4 million, more than one or two people sin every day. And everybody would be bringing in these sin offerings. I'm not sure what they did with all of this meat. Yeah.
Jeff, what would you do if you didn't live close to Jerusalem? Because you could sin one day and then the next day. You're not going to travel to Jerusalem.
Every day?
Every day. Would they store up a week of sins and go?
I'm not sure how they would work that. And I think when the kingdom split, Jeroboam was thinking that, we don't want these people to have to travel to Jerusalem all the time, so we'll make our own little, we'll put one down here in Bethel, and we'll put one here up in Dan, and they can, I'm not sure how they would handle that. But Jerusalem was the only place where a sacrifice was accepted.
It was that if it was too far to carry the sacrifice, they would have to sell the animal here. Mm-hmm. And take the money and buy
right,
that place.
Right, and they could do that. And that's where the whole problem with the money changers and the buying and the selling in the temple came in. So, yeah. The bloodless offering, if you couldn't even afford to go out and catch a turtle dove, you could bring fine flour. A tenth of an ephah, no oil, no frankincense. The priest would take a portion for the Lord and the rest of it would go to him. So, you know, there were bloodless sin offerings. Rare exceptions. Page 6, guilt offerings. Guilt offerings and sin offerings are basically identical. Except the guilt offering involves restitution as well. The same animals were offered, the same procedure was used between the sin and the guilt offering, but there was restitution involved. So if the sin was against the Lord, then the priest would figure out how much that trespass was worth. Yeah. And that opens the door for all sorts of corruption because he would be the one getting the money. And he would value the trespass, and then you would have to pay that plus one-fifth. And then I gave you a little note at the bottom, and I'll get to that in a minute. If it's a trespass against the person, let's say you stole somebody's sheep and ate it, you would, the value of that property, I don't know, maybe your sheep's worth 100 shekels, you'd have to pay the 100 shekels back plus an extra fifth. And the order, if it was a sin against the Lord, you would offer your offering and then pay restitution. If it was a sin against a person, you would make it right first and then bring your offering. Which, you know, kind of clarifies that statement that Jesus makes. you know, if your friend has something, or if your enemy or someone has something against you, and you're on your way to make an offering, make amends first, and then bring your offering, because that's the way it was supposed to happen in the Old Testament. You make restitution to the person you've offended, and then bring your offering. And then I just gave you a little summary of, at the bottom of page 6, what was offered on the altar, what was taken outside the camp, what was given to the priest, and what went to the offerer. So you can take a look at that. Let's look at the feasts quickly. So page 6. There were seven prescribed biblical feasts. There's another one that is mentioned in the Old Testament that is not prescribed by law. What would that be? No, it has nothing to do with feasts. That has to do with cleansing people after they touch the dead guy. Feasts. Esther. Purim. That's a biblical feast, but it's not prescribed in the Mosaic Law because it happened a long time after the Mosaic Law. There's another feast that is just mentioned in passing in the New Testament. The Feast of Dedication, which was known as what? It's in December.
Hanukkah.
Okay, and that had to do with the Maccabees and the Greeks and whatnot. So these are the Mosaic feasts, all right? And they occur in 3 months, all right? The first three feasts take place in the first month. The Passover, Feast of Unleavened Bread, and Feast of First Fruits. The fourth feast, the Feast of Weeks, takes place in the third month. And then the last three, Trumpets, Day of Atonement, and Booths, take place in the seventh month. Okay? And because Passover and unleavened bread are so closely linked together, sometimes they're just called unleavened bread. Sometimes they don't even call it the Passover. Okay? And so the Passover always took place on the 14th day of the month, regardless of when that day fell during the week. And they would offer a one-year-old lamb from the sheep or the goats. And keep in mind, all of these things are without blemish. Okay. The next day after Passover would begin the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And I made a point of telling you what type of work was not allowed. On all of them, no laborious work is allowed except for the Day of Atonement. The Day of Atonement was no work at all. In fact, the Day of Atonement is described in terms of a Sabbath. None of the other feasts were described in terms of Sabbaths. So, work could be done. It just couldn't be laborious work. In other words, you couldn't do something for gainful employment. On the Day of Atonement, I could do no work at all. So there are only 2 days in Scripture that are described in terms of a Sabbath: Saturday and the Day of Atonement, which I think is very important when you look at the New Testament and the crucifixion, how it's described in terms of the Sabbath day. It's not a Sabbath because the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread was a Sabbath. It wasn't. It was a Sabbath because the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread happened to fall on a Saturday, which meant that the Passover had to be a Friday. Anyway. There were 7 days for the Feast of Unleavened Bread. On each of the 7 days, they offered 3 types of burnt offerings, 2 bulls with their... And notice here, I've given you... the bull has the grain offering and a drink offering. And those things always went together. So, 2 bulls, a ram, a 7 one-year-old male lambs. All of those for burnt offerings every day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and a male goat every day. Okay? The Feast of First Fruits. The Feast of First Fruits always took place on the day after the Sabbath following the Passover. What day would that be? And don't say the 22nd. It would be Sunday. The Feast of First Fruits always took place on a Sunday. Which makes sense, because Christ is the first fruits of those who rose from the dead on the first day of the week. And so they would bring in their sheaf of the first fruits, 2 young bulls, a ram, 7 one-year-old male lambs, and then a 1-year-old male lamb. I'm not sure why they separated those, but they did. 50 days after that would be Pentecost. And Pentecost would always take place on a Sunday. So all of these other feasts took place on the 14th day and the 15th to the 21st and the first day, the 10th day and whatnot. The Feast of First Fruits and the Feast of Pentecost always took place on Sunday. What's unique about the Feast of Pentecost is the type of bread they brought. 2 loaves baked with leaven. And then this one, if you notice at the bottom, involved a peace offering as well. It wasn't just a burnt offering and a sin offering. There was a peace offering involved. And then, later on, 7th month, the first day, Feast of Trumpets. 1 bull, 1 ram, 7 one-year-old male lambs, and a sin offering. And then 9 days later, Day of Atonement. And pretty much all of Leviticus 16 is devoted to the Day of Atonement. And there were 2 sets of offerings here, and that's why I divided this. There was the burnt offering, the bull, the ram, 7 one-year-old male lambs, and a male goat for sin offering. That was separate, okay? And then the priest would bring a bull for himself and his family for a sin offering and a ram for a burnt offering. And then for the congregation, they would bring a male goat for a sin offering and a male goat for the scapegoat. And then a ram for the burnt offering. So what happened to the scapegoat? Okay, what happened first?
Priest put his hands on his head.
Okay, put
confessed the sin of congregation.
Right, and what's interesting is what it says he confessed. It says he confessed over the goat all of their iniquities, all of their transgressions, and all of their sins for the past year. So somewhere along the line, this priest is writing down everything the congregation was doing for the entire year, because he's got to confess it on the head of this goat. And then the goat is released. So I don't think they...
How is it possible to know all the sins of many million people?
Yeah, well, it was more of a congregational type of thing. So when the congregation disobeyed, this is what we need to confess. And then the last feast of the year, the Feast of Booths. So you need to go to the next table, because the Feast of Booths is a very involved feast. 8 days. And I haven't sat down to count how many animals were killed during this feast, but there was a lot. So, first day through the eighth day. On the first day, they started with 13 bulls, 2 rams, 14 one-year-old male lambs, and a goat.
Okay, 13 bulls for who? For one family?
No, this would be the congregation.
For the congregation.
All of these things, all of these feasts were national.
Oh, so this whole...
Yeah. As a family, we would do the Passover and then certain prescriptions for the unleavened bread, but these offerings here are for the entire nation. So 13 bulls on the first day, 12 bulls on the second day, 11 bulls on the third day, 10 bulls on the fourth day, 9, 8, 7, and then the eighth day, they can get away with one bull. But 2 rams each day, 14 lambs each day, and a goat each day. That's a lot of animals being sacrificed. Okay? On the next page. Okay, so those are all national yearly feasts. Okay? On the next page, there were daily sacrifices. So in the morning and in the evening, they would offer a one-year-old male lamb.
Is that for congregation or?
Yes, this is for the entire nation. Okay, and then they do the tenth of an ephah, fine flour mixed with the fourth of a hin of beaten oil, and a fourth of a hin of strong drink. Not wine, strong drink.
So this is every day.
Every day.
Apart from any feast or anything, just every day.
Correct. So, yeah, and I'll get to that point in a minute. On the Sabbaths, they would also offer 2 one-year-old male lambs and their drink offerings, their grain offerings. The drink offering isn't specified. On the new moon, what does a new moon look like?
Slivers. Crescent.
New moon doesn't look like anything. There is no moon. The new moon is when there is no moon in the sky. That would be the first day of their month.
That would okay. be the shadow of the earth on the moon.
Yeah, well, if you could see that. But there would be no lit moon in the sky. On the new moons, they would do 2 bulls, a ram, 7 one-year-old male lambs, and a male goat, and then their respective grain offerings and drink offerings. So... Which feast would have fallen on a new moon?
The dedication.
Feast of Trumpets. So in addition to the Feast of Trumpets, they would have had to have offered as well these new moon sacrifices. If that happened to be a Saturday, they would also have to offer the Sabbath sacrifices, in addition to the morning and evening sacrifices. So on the Feast of Trumpets, if that happened to fall on a Saturday, all of these sacrifices would have had to have been offered. And, you know, if any of these happened to fall on a Saturday, you'd have to do the Sabbaths. So, you know, the priest had to keep in mind, okay, today's a Saturday, we got to do this, and it's also a new moon, so we got to do this, and it happens to be the Feast of Trumpets, so we got to do this. I mean, these guys had to keep in mind everything that was going on.
Well, then if you missed some, it'd be unintentional sin, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and then you'd have to do that thing as well.
Does that happen now?
The sacrifices?
Yeah.
No, there's no place to sacrifice.
I don't think so.
No.
When the blood was supposed to be poured after they sprinkled the altar, they poured the blood at the base of the altar.
Yes.
How much blood can...
Oh.
Take.
Yeah. You know, in the desert, the sand would have absorbed that. Eventually, would have. I mean, just think of the smell. I mean, you've got
burning the meat.
Burning the meat. You know, at least the drink offering helps to make it smell a little bit better. But I mean, the amount of blood at the base of the altar. And the flies, and the smell. I mean, people don't realize how much blood is in a bull. I mean, it is an enormous amount of blood, or even a sheep. And you know, on the feast of booths, 13 bulls, and 14 lambs. And all that blood being poured out at the base of the altar. And when you're in Jerusalem, you're now on stone. There's nothing to absorb that. So they would have had to have cut channels or something to let that blood flow. And probably since it's right next to the Kidron Valley, they probably just let it run right outside of the valley.
Yeah. When Solomon built the temple, and I don't know if that temple, the burnt offering altar was made of boards or only that incense altar.
He made all the altars.
How can the boards take the heat?
Oh, I don't know.
I believe it was empty, make with
right.
Boards.
Yeah, the altar that they
it
made
was
in the wilderness,
with bronze,
right, was acacia wood covered in bronze.
But still, it's that heat.
Oh yeah, I'm sure that wooden side was burned up. Well, next time we will look at some of the pictures involved in these. So, if you've got questions, make sure you write them down. We'll try and go over them.
Thank you, Jeff. Yep. So, I think you all know that Sunday was my birthday, and also daylight